Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast. He's Aaron, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss a little Minnesota basketball. Like I said, the Gophers, the Timberwolves. We will start with the Gophers tonight. Unfortunately, 0-7 now on the road. Not 1-6, not 2-5. Nope. 0-7, and generally speaking, beyond that Rutgers game, we've been getting our butts kicked too. That's what happened early and often tonight. So we'll start with some Gopher stuff. We will talk about that Purdue game since it's somewhat fresh as far as a good win, making it 5 ranked teams on the season, of course, all at home. So we'll talk Gophers basketball. They won 2 in a row after losing 3. Now let's see if they can get a freaking W on the road. I think it's at Indiana next. Then some good news. The Timberwolves put it together tonight, shot really well, made the key plays down the stretch, probably 3 or 4 clutch threes. It got a little ugly at the end, but hey, that's just Timberwolves basketball. So we'll take that W. We'll talk about what we've seen over the last week or so as far as improvements and you know, negative stuff as well. Maybe the defense kind of slipped. Some of it is who you're playing too. Dallas can put up a bunch of points, but that OK City quarters were just rough. So we're going to get into this in just a little bit. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, welcome. It streams live in a variety of places here. It streams live on Ropadove Radio Podcast, your blogtalkradio.com/Ropadove Radio. You know, you don't have to go there and listen if you don't want to. Download the show there or listen to the browser. You can find this year's basketball show under the Ropadove Radio Podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, boxing, baseball, everything in between. And we recently started a Minnesota football, basketball-themed channel on Spreaker. It's called Living in Loserville. You may want to check that out year-round. Go ahead and listen to the episodes. We actually just updated an episode about the Vikings not long ago. So check that out on Spreaker, Living in Loserville. One more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial. Once you sign up, there's, of course, no annual contract. $55 is where the plans start. You can stream it anywhere. Of course, they have the cloud DVR. Just for signing up, you get a 7-day free trial of HBO Max. If you sign up for the Max package, that'll include HBO Max plus a free month of Showtime. That's AT&T TV Now, live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host and see how he's doing. You know, the last time we talked, old man Winter had come to town, and he really is out there sightseeing. He wants to see everything. He went up to Superior. It's -9 right now. It is freaking cold. It's supposed to hit -20 at 5 a.m. How's it going on your side, sir?
I'm seeing the same things here. Old man Winter just moved in. It hasn't left. It's like 24 below, I thought. I woke up one morning at like 3 a.m., looked at the temperature. It was like 24 below. And the thing is, Chris, it's not leaving. It's just staying here. Usually it'll come and go in a day or so. But this has been, 12 straight days of something like that, of polar vortex madness. It's incredible.
It's been rough. Although, you know, you look at the next couple of days, man, and you start to see single digits and double digits and 30 by next week as a high. So that's a Minnesota thing for you. All righty. So we will get into the Gopher stuff here first. Before we get to the bad news, yes, another road game. Let's get to some good news. Now, they were on a 3-game losing streak. You thought, all right, something's got to give. We're going to find out about this club to an extent. And both of us felt confident that the Gophers could go 2-0 over that stretch of games. Nebraska, in a ranked Purdue, which they had been playing really, really well. Lucky for us, the Gophers beat Purdue. It feels good still, in a sense. What was that, Thursday? Or maybe that was Wednesday. It was a ranked squad now. Like I said, 5-0 against ranked squads. That's pretty damn good. 5-0 at home. I think that's the only one in the country that has 5 wins over ranked teams at home. But that's the key thing at home. At half, it was fairly even, 32-30. The Gophers were down. They had like a 15-2 run, Purdue did, that got up by 6 or 8 or something, but the Gophers kind of, you know, spurted their way back at the end to make it close. Johnson was playing good. He had 8 early points. Carr was playing good, kind of spreading around. Mashburn off the bench. And Gabe hit some threes early and then later as well when we needed him. But Trevon Williams was a beast all day. He was giving us issues, 15 points early. I felt pretty confident, though, at 32-30, and especially with Gabe knocking down some threes, Aaron.
Well, looking at the way it went, you're right about Williams giving us trouble. And he did that the first time we played as well. This time we managed to come out with a win, though. And the biggest point I thought we took away from that game was, you know, we've been talking for a few weeks about Gabe and his shot, and it's just nice to not talk about that anymore. It's nice that he hit some shots. Now let's hope he can continue to do that. I really thought that was a difference in the game. Obviously, you're playing at home, come off a win from Nebraska. That would have been the one, if you would have dropped that, a lot of question marks would have been raised. But I didn't really know what to expect going into that Purdue game, and came out pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that would have been NIT territory, losing to Nebraska. And you know what? Carr and Robbins were in foul problems, too. It actually was competitive because of that. Then they came back in and ran the house. Williams, at the time, early in the second half, 17-2 over Robbins. Now, Robbins did pick it up late, same with Johnson, but from the three-point line, it took a little while. Both of them, for both teams, really, combined for 3 of 24 at one point in the second half, kind of early. Purdue kind of got up. It was 46-41. Wasn't looking great. That was like midway through. Gabe hit 2 three-pointers. Next thing you know, it's 49-48. Definitely under 10 minutes. And then Robbins was just falling apart, whether just giving free points at the free throw line, having bad falls, bad turnovers, missing people wide open. It was rough to see. And, you know, it was like back-to-back layups, back-to-back turnovers for Robbins. And they were in the bonus with like 8 minutes left. It was rough, dude. And I'm writing down in my notes another bad turnover late. But then Gabe hit, I think, 2 threes, and it was 58-55. Looking good. Robbins was still getting kind of dogged in the post, but I got to say he did step up down the straight stretch. He did get 11-10, and Johnson had 15-7. Carr was coming to life. And it wasn't like the Iowa game where we were so far away and then made up, you know, and had to go to overtime, but I love the way they grinded it down the stretch because it wasn't looking good like with a minute left, but they found a way to get the dub.
It's looking like they're learning a little bit how to do that. You know, for the last month, this hasn't been a great stretch for Robbins. He played really well earlier in the season, but as of late, it's been a little rough with foul trouble and missing some bunnies and doing some things like that. So, you know, he's going to pick it up at some point, but, you know, even tonight's game, which we'll get into a little bit later, he's having a little bit of trouble. I think maybe he's being defended differently or something like that and made a big difference. But, you know, Mashburn's been stepping up lately, hitting shots. Looks like a little more confident out on the floor, which really helps out. Trey Williams has hit some shots as well. And Brandon Johnson's been really consistent as a low post player and in transition. So, it was nice to see that against Purdue. We got to find a way, Chris, to get that to carry on to some of these road games. I can't figure out what's going on the road.
Yeah, Robbins had 5 straight games of 4 fouls or more, and he got in foul trouble early today. Only played 18 minutes, 1 of 8. Didn't really do much on either side. I'm sure he got some blocks or whatever, but they didn't really come at any kind of. Actually, he did. This might be the. I'm looking at it. This might be the only game he hasn't gotten a block. So that was great. Okay, it puts us back in the bracketology tournament, securing another win. And like you said, how are we going to find a way to freaking do something on the road? And now with Maryland, you know, both games, they just manhandled us. I mean, it was, you look at the start 22-10, and the numbers are just ridiculous when you look at it. I mean, it was 1 of 11 from 3 and 5 of 23. Now, they only took 6, they were 4 of 6 from 3, but they were also shooting 52% from the field. So they kind of comboed us up there in the assists, 8-1. We're talking, you know, not that deep into this game. Even when it was 31-14 with 4 minutes left, you're looking at it and you're just like, what the hell is going on? And even at half, you know, Carr had 7 points. They hit like a couple three or like 2 threes, I think. So it got them up to 30% from the field. But it was just ugly, and the points in the paint was 18-6. They had a lead as much as 19. It was 44-28, and it took, I think, 24 minute mark for Robbins to even get a bucket. Johnson got his fourth foul very early in the second half. I did notice a couple things though down the stretch. The Gophers' defense definitely improved. And they started knocking down some shots. Inyan gave us some good minutes. Him, Carr, a couple other folks. Obviously, Mashburn got it going. They were like our leading, you know, point getters at all, like 3 guys at 9 apiece. But another 3-pointer by the Terps stretched it out with 11 minutes left, 57-40. And even though they cut it, you know, to like 9 or 8 or something at the 4 minute mark, it was 65-56. Just ugly down the stretch in general, just ugly this whole game. I guess they're saying that Gotch is dealing with a little ankle injury. I believe I did see Robbins limping a little bit earlier, so maybe that was today that he got a little mixed up. That's why he had such a poor outing. But this shit is just ugly on the road. And we talked about it last, you know, time we did a show. There's no excuse. I mean, what the hell is going on? 0-7 now.
Yeah, just cold shooting on the road. I mean, really, if you go back and look at some of those shooting percentages for these road games, I mean, we come out tonight with 32.2% on 19 for 59 shooting. That's not going to cut it. You're at 28.6 for the three-point line, and that's 8 of 28. When you look across the court and they're doing, you know, 50% from the three, that's not going to help you at all. And you're missing shots, so you're getting a few extra offensive rebounds. But it just seems like they come out slow on the road and they find themselves in a hole, can't dig their way out. And things just kind of snowball from there. I mean, even the difference in assists where we had 7, they had 16, so the ball wasn't moving as well. I mean, that kind of all falls into that category of missing shots. And you know, it hasn't just been this game, Chris. I mean, we've shot poorly on the road in a number of other ones. And so you got to figure out what's going on with the shooting and do they fall, you know, they get into the tank after they miss a few shots or, you know, but I think a lot of it is just coming out to begin the game. They find themselves in these 10, 12 point, you know, 15 point deficits right off the bat. And that just, you know, puts unneeded pressure on you. If you could come out a little stronger, I think that might help you on the road. That's all I really have for the road. I don't understand what's going on with it at all. Yeah, that's the best explanation I can give you.
Yeah, I mean, we could sit there and say, well, you know, road isn't as hard now because there's no fans, there's no intimidation, there's no, I can't hear what you said to me. But in the same breath, of course, you could say, well, it has its negatives too because you're sitting in a room the whole time and you're probably stiff and blah, blah, blah. But everybody's going through it. I think Maryland has 3 ranked opponents that they've won on the road. So there's just no excuse for it. And it's, you know, you're not going to be great in the Big Ten on the road year in and year out, especially. You're just not. But 2 out of 7. I mean, geez, Louise, we could be, like I said, maybe like a 6 seed right now. And at some point, it's got to be from the top down. I mean, some are just like Patino can't coach, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. But, you know, this is a track record. We talked about how we start good, have some struggles, closed well. That has been something that we could get on Patino about. I think that's fair. But at some point, dude, it's ongoingly. I think he has like, I think I saw on Twitter like 6 or 7 road wins in general. I don't know. But at some point, we got to start to, you know, blame some of this on the coaching, because it's like, then get a different shot or something. I'm not blaming everything, though, like some folks on Twitter, because I see a lot of these open shots just not falling too. So the offense is getting them the shots. They're not knocking them down too.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to follow the script of past seasons, like you kind of brought up, you know, we're going to win a road game. It's probably going to be our last road game of the year. I mean, that's generally how it goes. When we need to win something at the end of the year, we always seem to pull something out, and I could see that happening. But, you know, to be fair, I think you're going to pick up a road game at Maryland. Probably not something you can hang your hat on. But, you know, there are a few that we dropped, like the Rutgers one and maybe a couple other that we should have had on the road. Really no excuses. Maryland's a good team, and think you're going to beat them on the road. Like you said, every year road wins are tough. But, you know, Iowa will go on the road and win. Other teams will go on the road and win a little better percentages than we are winning. So this drought of road wins – you know, it's kind of the first one we've gone through such a long stretch of no wins on the roads. That's probably why it stands out. But like I said, I don't really have much to say about it. I don't know what to think about it because it's I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. It's
well, hey, speechless is a good way to look at it. You're right about Maryland. It is a tough place to play, but this is the year to beat them. They're 10th in the Big Ten. They're 11-10 overall. I don't know, man. It's really starting to, maybe it's just irritating the shit out of us. And we know that we got a pretty damn good club, and man, just give us one or two. Speaking of road games though, at Indiana in a couple of days, there's basically 5 games left. At Indiana, home Illinois, home Northwestern, at Penn State, and then home against Rutgers. I kind of felt like this would be, and it's easy to say that then before this game, but I kind of felt like this would be, out of the 2 games, counting Maryland, of course, that this would be the breakthrough trip. Either Maryland or Indiana were going to get it. You know, Indiana's not bummy, though. They have some quality wins at home, and they're just kind of scraping by trying to make the tournament. It's hard to feel confident and say, yeah, I think they're going to do it, but I'm just going to stick to my guns. Even though we didn't say it on air, I didn't say it on air. I did think this, all right, this is going to be, they're going to win. They're going to go 1-1. Just like that last back-to-back road trip. We said, all right, if they go 1-1, that's cool. I'm still going to pick them for some kind of crazy reason at Indiana. What do you think? Do you think that we're just due to maybe just, like you said, start hot and just get the W just because we're due? I mean, shit, who can go 0-8?
Unfortunately, I don't think that. I'm going to call the first and only road win this season will be at Penn State. I'll make that call now. We'll see how it works out. You know, I want to say we beat Indiana. You know, my heart says we beat them. My head says no. My head says it's another road loss. We're not coming back. The team's not coming back. They're staying on the road to play Indiana, so they're not going to be in their normal environment. That might help. It might hurt.
It might help, yeah, with a short turnaround.
In fact, I think that might help. So, you know, I want to say, I'll make the call. I'm going to say we lose to Indiana on the road, and we go and we beat it, number 6 Illinois at home.
So, okay. So, kind of to end this stuff, what with these last 5 games, well, I would probably say at least 3-2 then, because if you think we're going to beat Illinois and I think we can beat Indiana, then I feel like it's going to be 3-2 that the Gophers are going to go 3-2 to close out these. I can't believe it's already five games. Well, knock on wood, let's hope we get to these games. And there's no postponement or nothing like that. But I'm going to call for a 3-2 record down the stretch. I agree. If Indiana, you know, if we don't get Indiana, we better get the Penn State, dude. We got to get the Penn State. Just lingering there as our last road game. I had kind of counted that, you know, already. So 3-2, I think, in the last five, and we'd be in pretty good shape, especially if it works out like you are saying with the Illinois win.
I'm going to go. We lose to Indiana. We beat Illinois. We lose to Northwestern. We beat Penn State, and we beat Rutgers. So 3-2, maybe a little different configuration than you, but I say 3-2 as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I figure I'm going to hold off on picking which and which by the time we get to next week. But, man, that would be something that you kind of need at this point because the conference tournament is not promised this year. They're doing it. They're going to do it. It's regularly scheduled, but we just don't know for a fact if it's actually going to happen. Anything else you want to mention with the Gophers before we get to these year T-pups?
Well, I just want to make sure they win one road game because I don't want to go to the selection committee with no conference road wins. One's better than nothing when it comes to that, even if it's Penn State or Indiana or Northwestern for that matter. So go in with at least one road win to show that you are capable of winning in conference on the road. I think zero's a much bigger problem than one in that situation.
Yeah, there's only two left, so got to win one of them. But yeah, that's a good point. And obviously we're probably going to, like normal, need, you know, at least one win to kind of get us all the way in there. But, you know, if they beat Illinois, then they really can't deny us unless they go 1-4 down that stretch. But we don't want to go there. But I do want to say Mashburn has showed me enough here that I'm pretty confident he can produce a fair amount next year. I mean, we can't just say Carr's going pro, but in the back of your head, you're thinking that. And it may be a spurt that we, you know, or a stretch here that we do well, much like a couple of years ago with Coffee. And all of a sudden he went from, well, he's not even, you know, in the first two rounds to, well, he actually might be drafted at the back end of the first because he started hitting some threes. So we'll see how it goes. Obviously, team first, hey, I'll take it if Carr goes. But I have liked what I saw out of Mashburn so far. I'll tell you what. The Timberwolves, you know, we know it's a work in progress. Here at the Living in Loserville podcast, we've been trying to keep this stuff in the back of our head. Like, all right, what was our expectations going in? And let's be realistic, right? Because it's all about developing pieces around a couple of guys. Obviously, if Edwards pans out like a lot of folks think he would, the top two players would then be Edwards and Towns. And there's a debate of who should start, whether it's point guard, whether it's power forward, even small forward. And I think that playing a bunch of players every game pretty much is going to kind of – we've already kind of singled out a couple guys in the last couple of weeks that have, you know, shown up. But, you know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. I really – you know, some of this D'Lo Rubio, some of it Vanderbilt, Reed, where should we do with the small forward position? McDaniels looks like a fit, you know, for the future, no doubt about it. I don't know if it's this year or whatever. But, you know, when push comes to shove – and I'll just take D'Angelo and Rubio. In 2 years, both those guys might not be on the squad. You know what I mean? And it might be Edwards and Cat. You'd hope that it'd be Edwards and Cat because you are seeing what Edwards doing at a young age, like really young age. So, you know, it's nice. Last time we did a show, we were 2-2. This time we had some, you know, competitive games. But it's just nice to get a win though while we're in this stretch, you know selfishly for us, right, to feel a little better tonight, but it's got to feel good just to get a W because it's been such a rough season.
really has. And just to have Cat back's a huge boost, I think. Of course, he has to get back and conditioning wise, but he looks pretty good overall. And but now you've got D'Angelo out, so we still can't get the team together. Those two anyway, playing on the same court, so you know, that's a problem. And there's a lot of stuff going on. You're right about the Vanderbilt thing, and you know, is McLaughlin, where does he fit in? Haven't seen much of Culver. Okogie can't shoot.
He's been hurt for a while.
Okay. Okogie can't shoot. It's been going around a lot, and I think everybody's got a place on this roster. It's just figuring out where it is, and I think that's kind of where we are in the season now. Obviously, Edwards is kind of rising. I think the thing we want to see from him, which we haven't seen yet and is bound to happen, is for him to take over a game, take over a fourth quarter, and really score. And you know, it's asking a lot of him to do now, but hopefully by the end of the season you can see something like that. But, you know, you try to stay as positive as you can looking ahead. But, you know, without D'Angelo, I think he's got some leg quad thing going on, apparently, is what they're saying. You want to see him and Cat, and we really can't decide much without those two on the court to see what it looks like.
You know, of late, the defense has been an issue since the last time since, you know, 1 year, and then, you know, what is it, 14 years since Garnett left, one of those years it wasn't. But as far as, you know, since we've been doing this show, we did kind of tighten up for those four or five games, if you look at the scores. Overall, there's some really good quarters in there, but man, the Clipper game in the third quarter, 33-20. Now, we scored a bunch of points in the fourth quarter, but we also gave up 39. The Dallas first quarter, 43 fucking points. The OKC, which they were a little shorthanded too. First quarter, 43 points. Second quarter, 40 points. Now, I'll say this though, you know, the third quarter was a 32-13, so it got them back in the game. But it kind of feels like the last five games or so, not tonight, but the last five games or so, it's just been they get kind of out of a game because of the first or second quarter, they grind back in, but they spent so much energy getting back. A lot of times you got to play perfect once you get back. It's like once you catch up, then it's almost like you got to take the lead so you can kind of stay there. Otherwise, that team's going to make a run. And there's Vanderbilt. There's guys that are starting to play defense. We're seeing hustle and all that, Aaron. But the 43-40 to OK City, who we had just played, is just like, really, dude? Really? That many points? 73 points or whatever? 83 points?
Yeah, I was trying to avoid that because I harp and harp about defense. But seeing those quarters, like you mentioned, were just like, I remember looking at it just going like 43 points in the first quarter. What are you guys doing? Have you woken up? Get your coffee? What's going on here? Giving up 43 in the first quarter. Like, those are the kind of things that annoy me. And maybe that's why he brought me up to get me going. But, you know, you can't have that because then you're playing catch up all game. And you're right about the pacing of the game. If you expend all that energy, you better take the lead because you need to take a breather before you get ready to close the game out. You can't just continue to go full steam like that. And, you know, there's a lot up in the air, man, and it's hard to watch this club and kind of go, well, this is something you can count on. Edwards is starting to be that. He's starting to be a solid brick that you can kind of go, okay, well, you're going to get this out of him nightly. Towns, more or less, you can say the same thing. But everybody else is maybe Rubio, you can count maybe his intangibles, maybe not his scoring, but you know he's going to be a sort of a calming thing and kind of put the ball where it needs to be. But other than that, there's just a lot of, you don't know what you're going to get on each particular night. It's hard to kind of tell, you know, what you can do matchup-wise with other squads. So, you know, obviously from the beginning of this show until the end of it, I'm going to harp about defense. But I did see something, Chris. Did you see there's an interview with Jordan, I think it was Jordan, I could be wrong, but, or it might've been KG. You were talking about, I think it was KG actually, about modern defense. And you and I have the discussion about the NBA and so on, and how the fact that you can't put a hand on a guy anymore completely changes the game defensively. And I thought it was interesting that KG came out and said that. He said that a lot of guys that played in his time couldn't play in this league because of the ability to not be able to hand check a guy or get your hands on them. I wonder if you saw that or heard anything about it.
Yeah, I did. And I've heard others say that as well. And here's an example of Trenton Hassel. The second they changed that rule, the very next year, he was basically not worthy of starting, barely worthy of playing, and he was out of the league not long after. And he was a solid – now, he was a role player defender in that lineup because, remember, Wally got hurt, so he came in and it just freaking fit. It was like, we got scoring with Spree and Cassell and KG. How about Irv Johnson? Because Ola Kambi, you can't trust him. And we'll go Trenton Hassel, but that's a prime example. Trenton Hassel, if you're not moving the shit out of your feet, yeah, I agree that there would be some of that. Now, you can go the other way, too, because on offense, could these guys stop these guys? No. You know, look at the top scorers back then. So AI, you can't put anything on AI. You just let them go. And obviously, Jordan was already averaging a bunch of points. You can't put a little – you can't clothesline him, or else you'd be thrown out of the game more than likely. That you know, it works both ways. But, yeah, I mean, it is the – we talked about the zone, how that played into it too, where you can – and that's another thing we started seeing on KG. Two, three guys mounting up on him, and we haven't even given a damn ball. We can't even get the ball yet to him. Or when we'd be down point guards like we were in that Sacramento series where he had to bring the ball up, then go post up. Like, here, Hoiberg, now post me up. Like, it was rough. But, yeah, I mean, you know – moving the feet, communication, you know, all that stuff. Scheme, of course, plays into it, no doubt about it. Let's talk a little bit about the last two games. The Charlotte game was fairly competitive. It was kind of like a pretty good start by the Wolves. They Beasley hit like four threes. I think he had 16 early points off those, 4 of 6, 30-25 lead. Really sloppy start, a couple of really bad turnovers, missed assignments. Zeller was just taking it right to Naz Reid, unfortunately. Cat had a rough start, but then he closed very strong, much like actually tonight. Noel, another nice spark of energy off the bench. At half, we were down 60-59. You saw Edwards not only driving, but playmaking and passing, or look to pass, and maybe it's a hockey assist. You know, there's a lot of hockey assists. KG speaking comes to mind on that, where it's maybe the extra pass after that, but you're the one who started it. And Edwards was so aggressive, just driving aggressively in the third quarter. I think he had like 12 or 14 points. And he actually has had those moments, maybe not a full fourth quarter, but in the fourth and in the third, he has had some moments where you go, okay, dude, and we're starting to see him have the ball more in just these last couple games with him and Kat, too. It's been fun to watch, but Rozier just went off on us when LaMelo wasn't. LaMelo had the all-purpose game, and Rozier was just dogging us, dude. 12 of 4 for offensive rebounds at the end of the third. You know, we made it interesting. I think Towns hit a three. It came, you know, it was 106-105, but down the stretch, we just weren't able to shut the door on those dang Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, I mean, what a breakdown. Good job, man. Point on that was Edwards, and let's go back for a second, though, Chris. You just put in my mind Allen Iverson without the hand checks, and I just can't believe how many points. I mean, all they did was beat that guy around, and if you wouldn't be able to touch him, that would have just been amazing. He would have probably scored 10 more points a game, would have been an incredible player. But Edwards, again, like we said about his the way he makes up his mind and goes to the hoop or takes the shot, there's just not a lot of indecision there. Where you see a player like maybe even LaMelo was a little bit, you know, herky jerky, this and that, where it almost seems like Edwards has a plan before anything goes on. And it's really impressive to see for such a young player, and it just really portends well for the future. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Would you rather have LaMelo? And you and I pre-draft had the conversation as well. And I think we both kind of settled in on Edwards, but you had to kind of convince me. I know I didn't want LaMelo because of his dad and all that stuff, but it seems to be working out pretty well.
That's the stuff we were talking about. I knew he was an all-purpose player. I knew he'd do that, but I just Wasn't sure about the threes, but man, the other night he went 7 of 12 from 3-point land.
Yeah, and I never really loved his shot either, but you know, I'm still riding with Edwards. I think we got the better pick there, and every game goes by, it kind of makes me a little more sure of it.
I don't think you're watching enough LaMelo then, because I'm not so that confident that we got, like, that there's a huge separation. Not about we got the right pick. Technically, on this roster, it isn't a great fit. I guess maybe in 2 years, when we, you know, but we have Rubio, D'Angelo, and all these point guards, J-Mac. It probably isn't a good fit for that. That's for sure. And like we said, in 2 years, you know, Rubio and there's a good chance Rubio and D'Lo won't, both of them won't be on here, because we'll be looking for a guy that can defend and hit the outside shot and just be like, all right, I'm not going to make mistakes. We won't be probably looking to score a bunch out of that, you know, out of that position. And in the fact that he'll have the ball in his hand, I think that we are seeing more of Edwards with that. And remember, Edwards, like for those folks out there with that battle back and forth, it's easy, you know, it's easy to say LaMelo has more minutes than him per game, but he hasn't been starting. So I think that's what's been really impressive, that he hadn't been, he's actually started less games than Edwards. So that kind of threw me off, like, man, he's really producing off the bench. Especially with the shot. Like I said, I knew he was going to be all purpose, but this dude is, I mean, he's going to win Rookie of the Year more than likely. And it won't be like bad that Edwards doesn't win it. It's really about your setting. And, you know, he just got in the starting lineup. He's getting more minutes, especially the last, you know, couple of like 6 games or whatever. And actually, I have the stats the last 6 games, or I'm sorry, last 8 games since being a starter, 16 points. 4 rebounds, which I'm really glad to see his rebounds coming up a little bit, shooting 36% from the three and 43% from the field. So he's doing damn good, no doubt about it. But, you know, I don't know where they're going to project in general. But I know I haven't seen the father there at all. So the message is clear to him. Shut the F up. You can sit there and do a little show if you want, but you're not going to be in front of a camera like you were when your first son got drafted.
Yeah, I mean, that was my big concern. My major concern with LaMelo, besides the fact that I didn't really love his shot. But, you know, he has been hitting threes, and he has been much more impressive than I thought he was going to be. I guess I just prefer Edwards on maybe the body type and a little bit of the just the matter of fact way about his game. I think that'll probably last longer than what LaMelo's got. But you, like you said, you never know. And I think either one's a great player. And, you know, Wiseman's also been playing really well down in Golden State. So, you know, that's three really good at the top. I don't think you could have gone wrong with either of them. I'm glad that we got Edwards, but I'm not going to fight you over you liking LaMelo either. So,
I didn't say I like him better. I just wouldn't say we got the better one for sure, because some of it is fit. And I do disagree with you about the longevity, because his game translates to staying in the league for 15 years.
Are you talking about LaMelo?
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible. I just think he's long-legged, kind of scrawny kid. Of course, he'll probably put some weight on. I just kind
of
like
he's 19. He reminds me of Rubio a lot, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I guess maybe a better scorer. You know, right off the top, Rubio was a little bit more of a, you know, I guess he scored a little bit more then, but a different type of score. So, yeah, I guess I could see that comparison.
Yeah, either way, though, I'm happy with Edwards. I'm definitely happy with Edwards. But that'll be something that people will talk about. And like I said, I mean, who cares? Like, Wiggins won the Rookie of the Year, too. But, you know, in the end, where did that get us? Speaking of outside shooting, though. And this is how bad it is here for 3-point shooting and just Timberwolves stuff in general. Tonight, Karl Anthony Towns has the most 3-point shots in history, but Wiggins was leading. So that kind of tells you, of course, the last couple of years, last 5 years, the whole league's been shooting more in general. But yeah, that's kind of a funny one. But I was really going to talk about Beasley. This dude has been on a freaking tear. That game he had 2 nights ago, 22 points in the fourth quarter, second most in the fourth in team history. And he's just right behind for third behind Hollywood Robinson, 1996, 23 points against Cleveland, dude. Hollywood Robinson, and that's the guy that through three quarters, man, he was ready to go, but then it was like the fourth quarter come along and he just miss. It was pretty ugly. But back to Beasley, the last seven games, 20 points, 31, 20, 30, 17, 24, 29, but also six assists, five assists. Like he had five again tonight, I believe. This guy, a lot of people, and I'm not talking about off the court, but even on the court, a lot of folks in the media, national and local, thought they were crazy for signing that contract based off what he can bring to the court is what I'm really talking about, not the potential offseason stuff where you're like, at that time, you're like, oh, I don't know. But that is a great contract, and he's only going to get better. This kid is just a ball of energy, man.
I agree. And, talk about instant offense. I mean, that's what he provides. Now, I think, and you can go ahead and argue with me or we can have a conversation about this, but when all's said and done and you put the parts, if that ever happens and you get the parts where you want them, I can imagine Beasley coming off the bench as instant offense type of player. Now, a lot of people yelling back saying, he should start. He's scoring all these points, and maybe that's how you feel about it. But I feel like a guy like that is just perfect energy off the bench to come in, get you some points when you need them, or maybe just kind of be a little change up. I like him off the bench if all is well with your starters. Now, obviously, we're not at that point right now, but what do you foresee, like, in the future if that happens and we get a little solid starting five? Do you like him off the bench or you like him starting?
Either way. I mean, he's starting now and he's playing awesome. So I can't sit there and say I don't like him as a starter, So either way, I could see him being a sixth man of the year type guy, no doubt about it. I agree with that. But I wouldn't be in a hurry just to knock him out of the starting lineup. Because, in the end, we don't even need scoring, really right now. But yeah, either way, I see what you're saying about the six man, no doubt about it. But like I said, it's not just scoring. He's rebounding more than Edwards and some other guys. He's getting a lot of rebounds for a night. And lately, like I was saying, I think three or four out of those games, it was five plus assists too. So I could see him working it. That's why I love the contract in general. And I really like him as a player. And let's hope this offseason he can really hunker down, because he's going to have to. He's going to be on work release. So imagine going to the gym and back, next year. I mean, he's blown up this year. Next year, if he can keep his head on straight like that and really use it, which I think he can, because obviously even with a distractive filled offseason, clearly the guy was focused on basketball too. So if you put that out of him, and literally for like 100 days, Aaron, he's going to be on house there. I think he really has a chance to push and become a better player in general. But to answer your question, both, man, I'm good with both.
Yeah, I mean, my only real concern, Chris, is just with that logjam at guard we have, who's going to be here and who's not. Now, Beasley obviously would be a pretty nice trade chip if that's something you wanted to look at. And I don't want that, but we're going to have to move some of these guards, and I'm wondering who has the most value and what you want to get back in return. But that's a conversation for a later day. I mean, even Jordan McLaughlin is playing really, really well. He's not getting the same type of minutes, but he's effective in those minutes, and Noel as well. I mean, you've got a lot of pieces, and I just wonder how that's going to work out in the end. I don't really have any ideas just because there's so many of them to try to work out that, and Russell's still out. So it's like, well, even you have to fit him into that equation as well. And you just kind of wonder, well, what are the pieces that are going to move and why? And I just feel like Beasley probably holds the most value. And I would hate to see him go. But like I said, that's a conversation for later, unless you got something to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it really matters, who's going to be your point guard as a starter. Because, if it's a solid point guard that can defend and hit some outside shots once in a while, then you could have Edwards at the three. It kind of matters, but I think it's flexible. And another reason why is because, let's be honest, like in Denver, he wasn't getting playing time. you know, and when someone would get hurt, he'd get playing time and he'd do really well, but he wasn't getting playing time. So I think he's flexible either way, you know, whatever. And that may be a trade bait. And that's the whole, you know, Chip, that's the whole point of signing that contract where we got him and we actually control the last year. It's a 4-year deal, I believe, but we control the last year. And so it's a win-win. There's really no, unless he has a really bad off season or something, knock on wood. I'm not even worried about that point, but I know what you're saying. I don't think we're that close to really having to, like, I don't anticipate in a month from now making a major trade because we haven't even gotten a chance, like we said, to fit this stuff around Cat or even Cat and Edwards now for that matter, or Rubio and D'Lo, which one that's going to be. Will it be sub? Will we play both? You know, right now the analytical numbers are weird. Like we talked about, a lot of people talk, well, we can't have D'Lo and Rubio on the same floor. Well, that's cool, but that's the second worst pairing, right? Well, the first worst pairing is Rubio and Edwards. So we can, you know, I think Rubio, in talking about tonight, Rubio played his best game tonight. Did he have, like, you know, 12 assists? No, he didn't. But the assists were going around. The key thing is he hit the open shot. And analytically, the catch and shoot, I think it's going into the season, it was 38%. That's his highest. That's where he's his best. Catch, shoot, boom. It's not off the dribble. It's not a step back. It's not coming off a screen. It's a catch and shoot. And he hasn't been able to knock it down this year at all. But, you know, tonight, but let's look back 2 games ago, 1 of 2. He only took 2. And he was 2 of 4 the night before that. And we're not asking him. I've heard some of this. Well, we're asking him to be a spot-up shooter. Dude, he takes 1.7 a game right now. Probably more now. It'd probably be 1.9 by the end of the night. But, you know, it's 2 a game tops, you know, usually on average. So we're not actually asking him to do that. But you're going to have to knock down shots so we can keep, you know, some space going. And otherwise, what we've seen this year is they just go off them and then they can double somebody else. But kind of went all over the place there, trying to get it back to the game tonight. That's what it was. But I thought Rubio tonight played a damn good game. He did a good job of settling. Him and Cat did a good job of settling folks down in the fourth quarter when it was getting a little ugly after they had like a 10-point lead.
Well, I think essentially that's his role, right? And we can talk about his shooting woes. We can talk about there's so much Rubio hate out there, and I don't understand it. I mean, I understand maybe he can't hit a shot, but if you can't see what else he does on the floor, that's what bothers me. And it's just so much hate for him out there. And I think people should maybe take a step back. It's a little knee-jerk in his rightful place, kind of like tonight. Like you said, he's calming things down. He's making sure you're running through your sets. He's doing things like that. Yes, to hit that open shot, it has to happen for spacing. You're absolutely right about that. But, you know, he tends to have 5-plus assists a night. He tends to work pretty well defensively. Now, he's getting a little bit older, so his quickness isn't quite what it was. But we didn't bring him in here to be – I think we've probably – he's doing more now than we actually brought him in here to do. That would be my opinion. I think he's probably a bench dude with, you know, some starter capability. And depending on that, I think that was the general idea, to just sort of be a locker room leader and to help out on the floor. But, you know, you're going to get nights like this out of him, and then you're going to get nights where he's, you know, 2 points, 11 assists. You kind of have to understand that he's going to go with the flow of the game. That's how he knows how to play, and that's how he plays. And I enjoy watching it, even if others don't. And I thought tonight he showed what he can do scoring-wise. And then I think he had an 11 or 12 assist game, what, a couple games back?
I think the last game maybe.
So you kind of there's a phrase for it, and I can't really think of it right now, but he gets in where he fits in. And I think that's kind of how it works with Rubio. And I just don't understand all the hate he gets, but, you know, he got it last time before he left too, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, you know, time and time again, except for like 2 games when someone was hurt with Utah, he's been played off the floor in the playoffs when he's been there. He got somewhat played off the floor here when he was here at the end of his career. Or not career, but, you know, with the Wolves. The thing about the hate right now is, like, this year, these 20-some games, has been his worst run. So I think that's what it is. It's one thing to be shooting 30% from the three. You know, okay, that's bad, but who cares? You're hitting some. That's one of three, right? Something like that, 33%, 33.3, right? I mean, but he was shooting like 19%, you know what I mean? And 35% from the field, so you're not even getting the – not like he has a great mid-range, but you're not getting any other point. He just – the turnovers, he's had some timely turnovers. But, you know, some of that is the new system too. And whether it's D'Lo, whether it's Rubio, whatever – we're going to, you know, that'll be an ongoing conversation this year. But what I do see is everybody's still in talk to each other mode. You know, it's not this head down. Beasley's a little up and down anyway. That's just kind of how he is, because sometimes you'll look at him during a game, you're like, man, he looks pissed off. Then someone says something to him and he chuckles and he's, you know, that's just him. That's his demeanor. He's just go, go, go. And he doesn't really want to hear much about it. He's going to go. And I do see Rubio kind of getting the system together more in these – basically since the last time we did a show, I've seen a major improvement there. So I think people have to give him a little time there. But, you know, when you're having your worst season as a pro, you are going to get hate. But I do think that people either go over his value or under, and he is undervalued as just a basketball player on a team, no doubt about it. But tonight, you know, 58-54, at the half, Raptors were up. Edwards was really doing some damage in the third quarter. Beasley had 20 and 5 by the end of third. They took the lead 81-77 with like 3-something left down the stretch. They actually did stretch it out to like 91-83 and got it to 104-98 at the 8:33 mark. Or wait, I'm reading something wrong there. But they were like up by about 8 or 10, and it was like, okay, dude, here we go. Let's finish this off freaking strong. And sure enough, you know, we had to kind of make it ugly down the stretch. Yeah, there it is. It was a 9-point lead. Toronto got it within like 4. But they hit just – Rubio hit a three. Cat hit a three. 7 straight points. We just got over the hump, even though it kind of felt like, oh, boy, we're going to lose this one again. It was just nice, like I said earlier, just to get a W so you can start to see, okay, we are starting to see a molding team together, but you need to collect some wins just for confidence.
Yeah, you do. And I think maybe we'll start to see a few more sprinkled in here. Now that Cat's back, Chris, and your centerpiece is kind of back, and you can kind of, I know you don't have Russell, but you can build around Cat again. Mm-hmm. It really helps out. And I think with Cat, we would have probably won a few more games than we won when he was out. Obviously, that's sort of an obvious statement, but not really, because a lot of people, they're not seeing the forest through the trees here. And with Cat back, now we can start to judge a little bit. Now we can start to say, okay, this works, that doesn't. And we're starting to see that a little bit more now. And a good win tonight. You know, I think we lost to Toronto without Cat. And so now we turn around and we win this one on the road. So it's a good thing to see, and it's start to build the team around it. I mean, Beasley goes off. I mean, you start to see a lot of what Cat actually brings. And I got to say, I've been a little impressed by his demeanor. It's a little bit different this season than I've seen before. Whether that's maturity or maybe he's on a different mission or, you know.
Obviously, all the tragedy probably, you know, puts the chips on his shoulder too, you know.
Sure. Or just focuses him. And so yeah. I'm thinking that's a really good sign, because the way this franchise is, Chris, I mean, we've got to get something out of it. And maybe this isn't the year for a playoff team, but we better see some pieces fall into place.
Maybe. No, I'm just kidding. I'd have to agree. We got 100 days left of the season, knock on wood. I mean, it's only scheduled to March because they did that purposely, but it was 74 games. We haven't missed one. Oh, no, we did miss one, but I think we made it up. So it's going to go to the end of May, knock on wood. And so literally in that time, you're looking at about, if we play them all, about 48 games. So now you're well over a half season, and then connecting, what, six or seven games now for Cat. So then, that pushes it well over 50. Plenty of time, to figure stuff out. I think, this dude, Rosas, seems like he's going to make a trade just because he's going to. But I don't see a major trade unless a playoff contender has like a hurt guard, right? Then I could say, well, hold on, we got that now. We got that for you. So maybe we make a bigger trade than we think. But I think this year I don't foresee a major trade just because of all the stuff we've talked about. But these next 100 days or so with like 40 some odd games, yes, man, we got to start tying it together, because next year is when, by trade deadline, we will start to have to make some real deal decisions. We'll talk about, rotations, starting lineups, a variety of things down the stretch of this season that hopefully, like you said, even if we can just, I don't think we'll go 500, but if we could just put together some back-to-back wins and whatnot. Any final words before we shut this puppy down, sir?
Man, I hope you're right about the trades, man. But you put it out there, dude. You put it out there, man. And I mean, it could be a blockbuster coming down now. So I don't know. I think you're right, though. I don't think they'll make any major moves just because what you have.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you just don't know what you have.
That if it's Bradley Beal or some kind of huge, we pull the trigger anytime on that. But I'm saying, as far as our guys, like combining three guys and shipping them out type stuff, I don't know if we'll do that.
No, I tend to agree with you, but you never know what's going to happen. I guess that's the point I was trying to make. But yeah, follow us on Instagram at Living in Loserville. Come to the Spricker page. Check out Living in Loserville on that as well. Leave us a like in both places. And let's see if we can get some more wins.
All right. We'll be back in, maybe a week, maybe 8 days, maybe 9 days. We'll be back, though. Peace.